Ms. Ross, and before you start, you may wish to lower the podium.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. I actually got a lesson in this before. Nope. I'll try.
Okay. Ms. Ross.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Beth Ross, and may it please the Court. I'm here this morning with the privilege of representing a class of Kansas drivers in an action that they filed against FedEx Ground under the Kansas Wage Payment Act. The threshold issue in the case is the employment status of the drivers. The plaintiffs are full-time pickup and delivery drivers for FedEx, and they perform FedEx's core business function. They were not hired to run independent businesses of their own, but they work in FedEx's business. We are here this morning on an appeal from a grant of summary judgment to FedEx and against the plaintiffs on the basis that based on the court's finding that no reasonable jury could find that these drivers are employees as a matter of law.
How do drivers ordinarily determine their routes?
The drivers' routes are assigned to them, Your Honor, by FedEx. When a driver is first hired, the driver is assigned a geographic territory. On the ground side of the business, that territory is fixed, although FedEx can change the size and scope of the route at any time. On the home delivery side, the smaller trucks that deliver to residential places, the routes are by zip code, and FedEx, in the contract, retains the right to assign packages to those drivers, whether those packages are within the zip code or not, and has full discretion to do that. Okay. The district
but,
court...
But on a given day, let's say... driver's area is in a particular zip code, how does he or she decide where to start, where to finish?
Drivers decide where to start and where to finish based on two sets of priorities. First, whether FedEx has negotiated fixed pickup or delivery windows with FedEx's customers, which the drivers then have to slot into their days, and then presumably the drivers set up their routes, you know, in some fashion that makes sense from the one side of the geographic area to the other.
Makes sense to who? To the driver or to FedEx?
Well, that makes sense to the driver within the confines of the geographic area that FedEx assigns to the driver and the packages that FedEx assigns to the driver on that particular day. There aren't very many ways to go from one side of town to the other, particularly in a geographic area, and the pickup and delivery windows certainly circumscribe the driving route. Beyond that, the fine routing is within the discretion of the driver, but that's a very small amount of discretion. The fundamental error that the district court made in this case, there were two. The first is that the district court, as a court sitting in diversity, did not apply or follow analogous Kansas law. And as a court sitting in diversity, the court's task was, of course, to make its best prediction as to how the Kansas Supreme Court would decide the case. The second serious analytical error that the court made was to draw reasonable inferences in favor of FedEx Ground in ruling on FedEx's motion and against the plaintiff drivers when, as a matter of ordinary summary judgment procedure, the court's obligation was to do just the opposite. Specifically, the court looked at Section 1.15 of the operating agreement, which generically and generally says that no officer, agent, manager, or employee of FedEx can direct how the drivers perform their jobs, language which is directly contradicted by other provisions of the operating agreement that confer on FedEx tremendous discretion and control as to not only the end result of the driver's work, the safe and timely delivery of packages, but also, I apologize, as to how that work is performed.
Do the drivers generally report to the same manager at the terminal each day, or do the managers differ from day to day?
The drivers report to the same terminal from day to day. My understanding is that each terminal has a terminal manager who's in charge of the whole operation. There's a pickup and delivery manager. There's a service manager. They have a number of managers. But the drivers are supervised terminal by terminal, generally by the same managers. And when the drivers report to work in the morning, under FedEx policy, they're required to check in with the manager, who goes over with them, according to FedEx policy, what their priorities are for the day, problems that they had the day before, if there were packages they failed to deliver, why did they fail to deliver them, and so on. In applying Kansas law, the court's task was to look at the right of control. Who is in control of the work that's done on a day-to-day basis and not just the end result? The right of control test in Kansas is the most important. The right of control is the most important factor in the multi-factor test, but that factor is informed by a list of non-exclusive factors, which in some cases is described as a 20-factor test, and in other cases is described in other ways. But those other indicia of employment status really are drawn from common sense and experience, and inform the right of control analysis by asking questions like, how is the work done? What types of skills do the workers have? What kinds of education and training? Is their work fully integrated into the enterprise of the principal as a whole, or are they truly independent? And so on. The Kansas Supreme Court has clearly said on any number of occasions that contractual labels that are placed in an independent contractor agreement do not trump what is actually done under the contract, as demonstrated by other provisions of the contract, management policy and procedure, management training, driver training, and so on. And the contractual label, the prohibition against giving preeminent effect to a contractual label, it serves an important policy objective. Independent contractors who are workers who are misclassified as independent contractors when an employer does that, the employer gives to itself the ability to avoid liability for workplace injuries, for taxes, for unemployment and workers' compensation and payroll, and compliance with employment law. In analogous cases involving truck drivers subject to far less control than the FedEx drivers here have been found by the Kansas Supreme Court and its lower appellate courts to be employees and not independent contractors. I would ask the court to look at the case of Noble versus National Carriers, a case which is perhaps the best example where there's the greatest discussion as to what facts the court considered to be important. The drivers there were long-haul drivers. Their days of work and their hours were their own. They had the ability to hire substitutes. They didn't necessarily have to do all of the work personally. They owned their own trucks, and they were called independent contractors and signed agreements that said that. But the Kansas Supreme Court found that it was reasonable to conclude that these drivers were employees because the employer was able to exercise as much control as it wanted or needed to control over the way that the drivers did their work. They had to check in several times a day. There were requirements that they had to meet with respect to how they maintained their trucks, how clean they kept them. They had identification cards that identified them as representatives of the company and so on.
Do FedEx contractors submit a business plan before they select a truck to buy or lease?
No, Your Honor, they don't. FedEx drivers are hired. The hiring procedure is set out in one of the FedEx policies. I believe it's CRL 551, which can be found in Exhibit 2 to the Declaration of Lynn Ferris. And the best way to find it would actually be to word search. Would be to word search the policy. And what that policy says is that drivers who are interested in becoming so-called contractors submit an application like any employee. They provide personal references like any employee and so on. They are drug screened, they go through a background check, they're interviewed, and then in conversation with management, they discuss the type of truck that would be appropriate for the route that they will be assigned. FedEx has very specific requirements as to what kinds of trucks can service what kinds of routes and so on. And at the end of the process, FedEx management decides up or down on whether to hire the driver. They do not submit business plans. They are package delivery people. Okay. The next and serious important analytic error that the court made in looking at FedEx's motion for summary judgment was to find that while FedEx admittedly supervises and trains the drivers with respect to how they do their work, that supervision and training is what the court referred to as results-only, results-oriented. And I think that the choice of words is interesting and worth thinking hard about, because while under the law, an independent contractor is one who the principal supervises with respect to the results only, like a building contractor who's hired to put siding on a building or to construct a well or to wire a house. The results-oriented controls and supervision in this case relate to what the workers do. Drivers are trained when they are first hired. They go through something called the Quality Pickup and Delivery Learning Program, or a FedEx-approved vendor who provides the same training. The QPDL manual is in the exhibits at Exhibit 4 at page 1559. The managers go through training. Perhaps my favorite document in the case is a presentation called Managing the Brand, which tells the managers how they're supposed to supervise and manage the drivers. That's at Exhibit 4, page 27. In the Managing the Brand training, the managers are told things like, if the drivers come to work out of uniform, wearing the wrong color socks, without, you know, unkempt, unshaven, they should send them home. That is not supervision as to results only. That's supervision as to method, manner, and means. The FedEx monitors and supervises the drivers closely. They go out on ride-alongs, which they call customer service rides. FedEx reserves the right to do that 4 times a year, which is far more control than most employees are subject to. And in those rides, managers are instructed to observe and document whether the drivers perform the proper procedures the drivers, not coincidentally, are taught in the Quality Pickup and Delivery Learning Program.
You know you're in your rebuttal time.
I know I'm in my rebuttal time, so I will...
I don't know why I have to control everything.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. I'd just like to make one last point, and if it comes out of my rebuttal time, I'll have to live with that. In this case, the district court found that certain opportunities FedEx has wrote into the contract to make the drivers look more like independent contractors were dispositive, despite the many indicia of employee status in the relationship as a whole. The court focused on the ability of the drivers to hire others to assist or to do their work, the ability of the drivers to have multiple routes, and the ability of the drivers to sell the interest in their proprietary interest in their contracts. The district court found that those rights were fundamentally inconsistent with employee status, but failed to take account of the fact that those rights, like all those opportunities, like everything else the drivers do during the course of their work, are strictly controlled by FedEx. FedEx has the power to veto any replacement, any route sale, and to deny approval to any driver to drive more than one route. And if anything, a reasonable jury could conclude that an inference arises from that right of control that FedEx has the right to exercise over those opportunities, that that those opportunities are indicia of a subterfuge to mask the employment relationship in the clothing of an independent contractor agreement. And with that, I'll thank Your Honors, and I appreciate your hearing the case.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Ross. Mr. Eaton.
I am going to have to make the adjustment. Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Tim Eaton on behalf of FedEx. Your Honors, there are three reasons why this case was tailor-made for summary judgment. The first is because, as counsel correctly stated, Kansas law deals with the right to control, not actual. So that was the substantive test that the district court had to look at. Secondly, the parties agreed that the agreement that defined the rights was the operating agreement, and it was unambiguous. So it wasn't a question of interpreting that agreement. The agreement was unambiguous, so the district court had to weigh the rights in making its determination as to the ultimate question of employment classification. And third, this was a class action. Plaintiffs made a strategic decision that when they had this class certified, they would only look to common documents, the operating agreement, the policies and procedures of FedEx, that would maybe fill in the rights that are clearly established under the operating agreement and any other common evidence. And that's what the district court did in reviewing this case in arriving at a summary judgment. The district court made the determination that in looking at the operating agreement, that the right to control the manner and means, which is a primary factor under Kansas law, was clearly given to the contractor, not only in the background statement of the operating agreement, in 1.4, the operating agreement where it deals with operation of the equipment, in 1.15, as counsel previously stated, where it said, in Judge Tinder, in response to your question, where it said clearly that FedEx cannot control the route in which they take, the breaks that they take. If they're done, they're done at the end of the day, unlike an employee. And that is clearly stated, and there is a policy at FedEx, which was also considered by the district court. It's 007, which says in it that no FedEx manager or employee can do anything inconsistent with the rights that are granted those contractors in the operating agreement.
Could a driver's disregard of a manager's so-called suggestions result in termination for breach of the operating agreement?
Your Honor, the district court covered that in looking at business discussion notes. And he did reach the conclusion that there may be instances where that contract may not be renewed, but that would be the case in any contract that you would have with an independent contractor or any other commercial contract.
So the answer is yes.
Yes. Okay. Absolutely. And I'm sorry I didn't say that right off the bat, but that, yes, that is the answer. And what the district court examined in looking at not only the manner and means in which the job was being performed was to be held with the contractor, it looked at other factors under Kansas law, such as the right to terminate. In this case, the termination provision was weighed and considered by the district court, and the district court correctly reached the conclusion that it was not a termination at will. That was a legal determination.
The core issue is whether these drivers fit the definition of employee under the Kansas Wage Payment Act, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, that's correct.
And I don't see any discussion in your brief of that act at all, or the language of the act.
Your Honor, there's no definition in the act itself.
A very broad one? Isn't it really a definition that says any person allowed or permitted to work by an employer?
I think what the reason that you haven't seen much discussion of the Kansas Wage Payment Act.
Isn't that definition in the statute?
I don't believe so. I think it's in the Kansas Workers' Compensation Act, which has been referred to in most of the cases, because most of the Kansas cases, Your Honor, I believe, have dealt with workers' compensation claims. There's a few vicarious liability cases. And what those Kansas cases have held, particularly where there's an agreement, and often there is an agreement where there's an independent contractor involved, the Norp case, which we cite in our brief, the Lowe case, which we cite in our brief, Dane case, which is cited in our brief and the plaintiff's brief, have been summary judgment cases where the courts examine the agreement to determine whether or not there's an independent contractor status. And in the Lowe case, as in this case, where the court found that the agreement was unambiguous, its job as a matter of law was to determine whether or not those rights given in that agreement favored an independent contractor status, and they concluded it did. So under Kansas law, that was an appropriate determination. The court, the district court here also looked at a number of other factors, such as the method of compensation. Here there are variable means of which payment, dealing with certain piece and stop rates, for example, how many stops and deliveries a contractor makes during the day is going to be the basis of their compensation. There are certain incentive bonuses that they have. They also have the right to actually flex their route, which means if they don't think they can meet that particular day, get all the packages delivered, they can talk to another contractor and informally work out an arrangement with that contractor to make those deliveries.
Management can do that too, though. Can't it decide that on a given day it wants to take certain packages and shift them over to someone else?
Yes, it can. And the people that they would shift them to, Your Honor, would be people who've agreed to receive this flex rate each day, so they were available or on standby.
Which is everybody, isn't it, except
1%. I think the district court indicated 99%. So almost everybody has taken advantage of that. But, yes, management can do that. But when you're looking at not only the right to control manner and means, which is the primary test, you look at the fact as to whether they could be terminated at will. You look at how they're paid. You look at also the entrepreneurial opportunities, which is one of the tests which is in the restatement, which has been discussed in two Kansas cases, both Home Design and Crawford. And in those cases, they discussed it in terms of profit and loss. But here, the contractor doesn't even need to drive that vehicle that the contractor makes available that day. He can hire a replacement driver subject to minimum qualifications of FedEx. And if you look at the minimum qualifications, which are in the operating agreement, no felony conviction, must be 21 years of age, must have good driving experience. Those are the only minimum qualifications that FedEx requires in order for these contractors to hire a replacement driver. The drivers can also hire helpers. The drivers can sell their route. How many employees can sell their job to someone else? And under the agreement,
from what I gather, almost everybody working in Chicago. Of course, those kinds of sales usually lead to indictments.
Point well taken, Your Honor. Other than in Chicago, how many opportunities do employees have to take unlimited vacation time as long as they have a substitute, take as many sick days as they need as long as they have a substitute, never even drive as long as they have the substitute, buy other routes? This class is limited to full-time drivers, yet it doesn't have any restrictions as to full-time drivers who may own other routes. So they're in business for themselves as well, in addition to driving, so that doesn't take away from the fact that this operating agreement gives entrepreneurial opportunities. And the district court, I believe, correctly held that when you look at the common documents here, you look at the operating agreement and the rights it gives, you look at the policies and procedures that complement that agreement, there was only one conclusion, and that was that these were independent contractors, particularly when you're looking at...
How does Kansas treat the franchise arrangement? I take it that every McDonald's store, people have to dress in uniforms and they have to meet a lot of standards set by McDonald's, but the owners of those stores are treated as independent contractors. At least I'm assuming that, but maybe things are otherwise in Kansas. How does Kansas treat franchise arrangements?
Your Honor, the only case that we found in our brief, or that we found under these circumstances dealing with independent contractors or employees that involved a franchise was the Neff versus Dairy Queen case, which was not a Kansas case, where it discussed in that case that you look to you look at the contract and what it provides, and under those circumstances, whether it provided control or not control, they determined these were independent contractors because in the contract itself, the rights were reserved. That's the only case I'm aware of. I do know, though, with respect to dress, that in Kansas, the two cases that discuss dress are both Home Design and Crawford. Mm-hmm. I see my time has expired.
Thank you very much. Ms. Ross, anything further? You might have 30 seconds.
I'd like to respond.
And we know the FedEx man can talk really fast.
I'm going to keep my 30 seconds and not fuss at the podium. I would like to respond to 2 points to answer your question, Judge Rovner. FedEx reserves the right to terminate any contractor for failure to comply with the standards set out in the agreement. FedEx does not wait until contract renewal time comes up. FedEx has an absolute and express right, and that's in Section 11 of the agreement, and the standards are in Section 1.10. Second, the Kansas Wage Payments Act does define the term employee as any person allowed or permitted to work by an employer, and Kansas case law tells us that the Kansas Wage Payments Act expresses the strong and longtime Kansas public policy of protecting wages and wage earners. So the statute is broad in its scope, it's protective of employees, and workers like the FedEx drivers who do what they are told when they are told to do it.
Thank you, Ms. Ross.
Thank you, Your Honors.
The case is taken under advisement.